Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Massachusetts Congressman Jake Auchincloss is a veteran. He is a former Marine who served in Afghanistan, and that makes him a rarity. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, only about 7% of Americans are veterans. So what drove him to join the self-proclaimed few and the proud? And with the 20th anniversary of 9/11 upon us, we wondered if that day pushed him to serve in the war that it triggered. And how does the legacy of September 11th affect how he legislates today? Well, let's ask him. Congressman Jake Auchincloss represents Massachusetts' 4th District and joins us now. Congressman, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on.
So I'm going to start by asking you your most vivid memory of September 11th, Congressman. I know you've said you were in middle school.
I was in eighth grade. I was the editor-in-chief of The Daytime, our middle school monthly newspaper. And the faculty advisor for the newspaper pulled me out of class when the first tower was struck. And I remember walking down the hallway with him and him describing the situation. And for the rest of that day, we were, as best as an eighth grade newspaper can, we were covering 9/11. And I remember watching the towers fall and realizing, even as a young teenager, that all the days that came afterwards were going to be different than the days that came before, and that this was a generationally defining moment and just an agonizing one to watch. I think for, as with all of our listeners who are old enough to remember, I can still picture the images of people falling from the buildings. I can still remember the coverage and that sickening sense in your stomach of just imagining what that day was like for those who were there.
Maybe it's the mom in me. Maybe it's that I had an eighth grader recently. I knew you were in your school newspaper. I knew you covered it. But hearing the fact that an adult in your life came down and in this moment of what was clearly emerging trauma pulled you out and in eighth grade gave you the responsibility of covering it is kind of stunning. How do you think about that now?
I think about it as terrific pedagogy, actually. We took our journalism seriously at Day Middle School in Newton, and it is a way of getting kids involved in the current events that are shaping their lives, giving them a sense of agency in events that might feel so big and so much larger than them that they can be disorienting. Obviously we're not going to be sending eighth graders to be foreign correspondents in war zones, but it's a healthy, I think, dynamic of introducing kids to the events of their lives in a way that makes them more digestible.
Did you go home that evening and talk with your parents about it? Did you stay late at school to cover it? Let's take us through that first 24 hours.
Stayed late at school to cover it. Now, keep in mind that we're a monthly newspaper and we weren't moving up our publication date. So I think it's safe to say that our headline was not exactly breaking the news of 9/11 when it came out a couple of weeks later. Stayed late to cover it. And was also trying to find the local angle, as you would say, where we were determining whether there were students in our school who were directly affected by this. And I believe that, if I'm remembering correctly, one of our students was actually supposed to be on the flight from Boston to LA. Our listeners will remember that these flights took off from Logan. One of the students in our school was supposed to be on the flight from Boston to LA. And that literally, I think at the last hour, had not gotten on that flight. So that was a main part of our coverage.
So when we were talking about this, as we've been preparing, we're doing a special show on Friday. And we have a multi-generational team here at Radio Boston. And we've been talking about living through that day and processing it at different ages. And our producer, Cynthia, was saying she was struck by you being in middle school, which is that time when we do begin to become aware of the world around us. And we have some tools to make sense of it, but also not all the tools to make sense of it. How do you think both having that experience at that age and that responsibility at that age has shaped your worldview?
I think what's been, because I was reflecting on this as well, as we were coming up on the 20th year anniversary, and I view that day as two intertwining tragedies. The first tragedy was, of course, the event itself and the loss of life that we all were witness to. And the second tragedy is that America then took a tremendous amount of moral capital that it had. We were united domestically. We had a deep reservoir of goodwill internationally. And over the last two decades, I think we've squandered it. And everybody looks back at their, not everybody, a lot of people look back at their childhood and there's a lens of nostalgia on it, right? And that's true for me too. And so that kind of lens of nostalgia is now also intertwined with this sense that we were, as a country, I think, had such standing and had such opportunity. And over the course of my adolescence and then 20s, I was really have seen us wasted. We could have said after 9/11, we are going to execute a sustained counterterrorism mission. Of course, we've got to bring these terrorists to justice. But we also recognize at a deeper level that so much of the funding for these terrorist groups have come from our reliance on foreign oil, for example. And we could have made our raison d'etre a campaign around climate action. And no, that was not too soon to do that 20 years ago. Al Gore had been telling us that this was something that we needed to work on. Imagine if the United States had used that international goodwill and the domestic unity to take action on climate 20 years ago instead of belatedly now. There's just so many of those missed opportunities along the road these last 20 years.
So I'm hearing the congressperson in there, and I don't mean politics, I mean policy. And I want to come back to that, but I want to get the Marine in there as well. And I want to know, did you join the Marines in part because of September 11th?
Yes. And no decision, especially one as important as that, is single-threaded. I joined because of 9/11. I joined because I wanted to challenge myself personally. I joined because the Marines had sent my grandfather to college in the darkest years of World War II and changed his life and indirectly changed mine as well. I joined because I felt a deep commitment to this country and thought that it was a way to manifest that commitment. So I joined for a whole host of reasons, but 9/11 and the imprint it had on me as a teenager was absolutely one of them.
And I don't want to be voyeuristic here, but I do want to ask, was there ever a moment when you were serving in Afghanistan or just in the Marines that brought back the events of the World Trade Center for you in a particular way? Did that ever during your service kind of come full circle for you?
I don't think so. No, I don't think that 9/11 felt that immediate 10 years later by the time I was in, where it was sort of something I was replaying as I was in the service. It was more, I mean, at that point, the war in Afghanistan had become a grinding counterinsurgency where this sense of retribution for 9/11, where the direct sort of feedback link between what had happened on 9/11 and why we were there had already been broken. And, you know, that was why it was so hard to animate our mission statements in Afghanistan is what was the overall commander's intent at that point? Why were we there? We had brought the terrorists to justice, or at least Osama bin Laden was dead. We were able to execute counterterrorism missions, but it had devolved into this sprawling counterinsurgency that was even apparent to a lieutenant that it was really divorced from the original mission.
That is something to hear you say that. As someone who served in an arena, we got there because of September 11th. For you to say there was really no connection left is a remarkable statement personally, but also a remarkable policy statement.
It is. And I've written about this and spoken about this a lot recently. It's quite remarkable, actually, to listen to example to President Bush speak in the weeks and months after 9/11, because he articulates a relatively tightly scoped mission. It was counterterrorism. It was we're gonna get Osama bin Laden. We're gonna bring these terrorists to justice. And then, like a frog in water that was getting hotter and hotter, slowly it became this nation building exercise. And the national security establishment in Washington committed every single failure of decision-making that behavioral psychologists will tell you that humans are subject to, from sunk cost bias to confirmation bias. We just kept on sinking in more times, more troops, more treasure, and never had an end game to get out.
I want to note, what I don't want to do now is dive in deeply sort of in a back and forth on Afghanistan policy. And that's not to push back on what you said, but just to note, we've had you on before on that subject. We've had a lot of conversation here on the show in the last several weeks around that. And I just want to note that. I want to bring you now to Congress. I said a few minutes ago, I hear the congressperson in there. I want to talk about the Marine for a minute. Now to the congressperson. Is 9/11, 20 years on, I guess I imagine people walking through the halls of Congress right now and the echoes of January 6th reverberating quite loudly. Are there any echoes left of 9/11 reverberating through the halls of Congress today?
I understand your question, where you're sort of asking, is it emotionally animating policy and kind of sparking debate the way that January 6th does? No, I don't think it is in that respect. I think it is almost, to put it one way, I think 9/11 is almost closer to December 7th than it is to January 6th, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. It does. And again, striking. Just, I mean, we haven't been talking about 9/11 for years now. And so to be having these conversations now and resituating that moment in our historical arc, our congressional arc, our policy arc now is remarkable. Is there a tale, not from an emotional standpoint, from a policy standpoint, that you think is particularly relevant today? And I, you know, I guess at some level you might say to me, duh, Afghanistan. But I wonder if there's more there, or if that is sort of the sole domain now of the legacy of September 11th in our policy.
Well, I think the other legacy has been the expansion of the surveillance state domestically, and the Patriot Act, and the amount of scope that we yielded to the federal government in the name of national security and counterterrorism to surveil its citizens' lives. There's so many avenues here for debate. I think the one that most troubles me has been facial recognition technology, just because of how both how good and how bad it is. How good meaning how incredibly uncannily effective it can be at picking out faces from a big crowd, but how bad in the sense of how much power that has granted to agencies and how much bias can be embedded in it inadvertently. And we gave up a lot in the name of national security to the detriment of civil rights in the years following 9/11. And one of the lessons of history and politics is that states are hungry. When you grant them these powers, it's real hard to get them back. And that is going to be a generational project.
I do want to note facial recognition technology has proven to be particularly flawed when it comes to recognizing faces of color as well, which I think you were in part alluding to.
Yes.
So the 20th anniversary is this Saturday. We'll do more on it here on the show on Friday. How will you observe and what will you be thinking about that day?
I am going to be... I'm going to be trying to think about the day itself as it was 20 years ago and really centering it on those who lost their lives, because what can happen to these larger than life tragedies is that they become imbued with all this other meaning, and they become a vehicle for every other conversation except for one that is centered on the victims themselves. And that's going to be my focus as I remember it, is the 2,000 plus people who lost their lives and what was taken from them.
Massachusetts Congressman Jake Auchincloss of the 4th District, really appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.